The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
On News Talk.
Before any of it, we're going to kick things off with our afternoon update. John Lee is with me, Executive Editor, The Daily Mail, and Niamh Marr, Commercial Creative Director with The Journal. You're both very, very welcome. We might start with the upcoming European elections, looming European elections. And we spoke, John, yesterday to... who did we speak to yesterday? Niall Boylan. I forgot who was.
That was a trick question.
Well, there's just so many. I'm making sure you're listening to the show. You see. Who was on the show yesterday, John? Niall Boylan, who is running in the Dublin constituency. I guess one of a number of celebrity candidates, you might describe
him as.
Yeah,
it's kind of come out of nowhere, this pre-election for celebrity candidate Cynthia Nomurcu, who I'm sure is still considered a celebrity, even though she's a very successful barrister. I introduced the Eurovision, I think, was a big yeah. one. May even have been the Riverdance one, which she's a lot to apologise for there. But that's and then Nina Carberry is a very famous jockey, if you know your jump racing. But it's funny. Now we've got Niall Boylan. The proving of the pudding will be they can go on and, as Niall proved yesterday, and do a very adept interview and everything else. But there are certain requirements of a candidate still, no matter what has changed in the world of social media and everything else. You will need to get out and meet people. It's extremely taxing on your time, energy and everything else. I haven't seen her in action, but I understand from quite a few people in Fianna Fáil that Cynthia Nomurcu is a fantastic canvasser and is showing them all up. And her running mate, Billy Kelleher, a grizzled old veteran, and I don't mean old, but he's around
yeah,
an awful
around
long
for a
time.
Few years, yeah.
Is I understand a bit taken aback that he has a bit of a threat coming up the inside rail. I haven't heard much about Nina Carberry's canvassing abilities, and we'll see with Niall Boylan. But that'll be the proof. Yeah, they can declare and they can proceed to be elected, but getting elected in Ireland still in 2024 requires doing the old stump speaking, and that's a difficult one for a lot of people to adjust to.
So there's local elections as well. There's going to be a general election within the next kind of 10 months as well. And what do you suspect is the attraction of running for Europe when it comes to a candidate, somebody who's never been involved in politics?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, Niall Boylan is a broadcaster. He's a broadcaster with 30 some odd years. I think the attraction, well, to be honest, I don't know. I think it's like the least
money.
Attractive thing that you could do. The thought of going into politics in any capacity,
well,
from my point of view.
Let me put it this way. What's the attraction in running for Europe compared to running for the Dáil, would you suspect?
I know, and I know that you asked Niall that. I suppose he fully believes that he has things to say in Europe that will bring about change. I mean, I would imagine nobody is going to get into the game of politics unless they fully believe, you know, that they can bring about change. And I know that you did ask him about that. Why wouldn't he go, you know, more local, especially because he really does believe that he's the real voice of Dublin. And he says that, and he says that in his slogans, and he says that the career politicians, you know, are not listening, and that it's time to elect new people. I suppose, you know, where does politics end and celebrity begin, though? That's the real question. I mean, you know, everything in our society is geared towards fame now. So, like, are you a politician? You become famous because of that. You're famous, so you get into politics. You can only look at the US to really see. There was a survey done in 2021, and 63% of Americans believe that celebrities make good politicians. So, I mean, you can only look to the US to see that it really works over there. Whether it will work here remains to be seen.
There's a kind of an egotistical thing to it as well, isn't there? And I say that as somebody who is in a job where I think kind of ego arguably plays a part in it as well. You know, in terms of celebrity and running for high office, and it's not to say that they don't have great intentions as well, and they don't kind of all want to ultimately raise the living standards of their constituents, John. You know, it's kind of John Hume ultimately said that's really your most basic kind of function as a politician. But it kind of tickles the ego a little as well, doesn't it?
Well, I'm 20 years in Leinster House working with politicians. I'm married to one. So I understand a bit of how they tick. And absolutely, I think ego plays a role. And even certainly, and I don't mean to this isn't a criticism in any way, but certainly some rural TDs and senators I know, they find it very hard to adjust after after politics to the realization, a bit like the parish priest in latter days, or and other significant figures within a community, that they're no longer that central figure in the community, almost a celebrity in some ways on the local level. So of course ego plays a role, and a different kind of more praiseworthy ego, I suppose, the reward of helping people in your community. But I think we may see something of a backlash against that celebrity type candidate, and we already have. So for instance, Boris Johnson in the UK, even though he's been in politics an awful long time, previously a political journalist, he was an absolute catastrophe in the highest office, because really that he had his moral failings when it came to understanding the requirements of ruling a country during a pandemic. Similarly, Donald Trump did lose his last election. Whether he's going to win it or not, I'm actually doubtful. So I think if ego and celebrity is your only window into politics, you're not going to work out too well. So I think there needs to be a multifaceted aspect to your character if you're going to run for office. And saying I want to boost my ego or boost my profile even is not going to get you far.
It all comes down to money. It has to, says one of the listeners. Somebody else says the difference is salary and expenses and no real accountability in Europe to Irish citizens outside of election cycles. None of them have any policy that requires a position in Europe to help progress. Mairead McGuinness probably would have been considered, though, a celebrity candidate, would she, when she ran initially, now European Commissioner? She's so there's nothing to say that you wouldn't be successful.
And we've had them, can I think of a successful, like, you know, Jack Lynch could really have been
Maria Walsh, who we've mentioned. I guess she was a celebrity candidate, too, the last time out.
Yeah, so, you know, whatever the celebrity is of the day, and as I say, Jack Lynch is one of the most successful politicians we ever had. If Sean Kelly has run for Europe, he's also a former, is that a celebrity, former president of the GAA. And Ronald Reagan, of course, one of the greatest presidents of all time, was a biggest celebrity, as they come. And Arnie.
Listen, we'll be talking plenty about European elections over the next 5 weeks. So we might kind of part that conversation for the moment. And instead, I want to ask you about something we're coming back to after 5 o'clock. And it's about kind of the beds available to people suffering with eating disorders, adults with eating disorders. So only 3 beds available in the entire country, Niamh.
Yeah, it's really shocking when you hear that figure. The HSE plan, they had planned to open 20 new beds by 2023. It went completely unfunded. This is the specialised treatment, and I think we need to differentiate that. So this is the 3 beds with specialised treatment for people with eating disorders. The people that are impacted by eating disorders are presenting at, you know, emergency rooms, and they're then being, I suppose, eventually seen, but moved around. And I think that it's the access to specialised treatment, which is a huge fall down that we're having. Holly Kearns raised this in the Dáil, saying that it seems that the government does not understand how serious eating disorders are. And, you know, the new Taoiseach, Simon Harris, said as well that historically there's been very low investment when it comes to public provisions to do with this. I think when it comes to what they had planned, they really did want to get into the community, and they had plans to open 16 treatment hubs. Out of those, by 2023, 11 have been opened, and they have promised to open the remaining 5. They have hired 80 people with funding for 20 more. So work is being done, but not fast enough for the spike that we're seeing in eating disorders, in particular with adults.
There was COVID, you know, that came right in the middle of that period, 2018 to 2024, John. But I'm just conscious, like, Simon Harris was Minister for Health when he made that promise. There was 2 years between that promise and the first COVID case in this country. And exactly 0 euro and 0 cent went into funding these extra 20 beds.
Yes, and he would have been accused in the past of being an over-promising politician, and you know, the substance.
And is that, that's a fair accusation, though, I think. Isn't
I think if the substance doesn't follow follow what would be known as style, then it is an absolute criticism. He can change that very quickly. He promised in the Dáil the other day by funding in the next budget. But this is a criticism that would have to go to central government, i.e. the minister's office, because recently we had an instance with Stephen Donnelly referring to monies that had been allocated to certain parts of the HSE and had just not been used for the particular allocation. But in this instance, the money just wasn't provided, which illustrates clearly that there wasn't any kind of interest in it from the Department of Health at the time. And why that is it because there's a latent misunderstanding of eating disorders? I think, you know, many people, I only because I'm a journalist in the last 10 years have come to understand that it's absolutely a psychiatric illness. These are just my speculation, were they reliant on I think there is significant treatment available in the private sector, but that requires people to have insurance. But the public sector has made, the public health service has made absolutely no provision for it. Simon Harris can quickly remedy this in the budget. But then again, he has a Minister for Health there who has to agree with him.
It has echoes as well. Some people's experience, when you talk to them, Niamh, of the experience that parents have, say they've got kids who are trying to access CAMHS, the mental health services, and they also have a diagnosis of something like autism, and they get kind of moved from pillar to post. Now, you shouldn't be at CAMHS. You should be with disability services. Disability services are saying, no, you should be at CAMHS. You see that in terms of the treatment of people with eating disorders, there's a sense of, well, the psychiatric care, we can't deal with that. If you are malnourished, you can't access the psychiatric care because you're not in a position to be able to kind of process it and deal with it. Sort out your body weight issues before you get the psychiatric service. I can't do that without the psychiatric service.
Absolutely. And this isn't new conversations that we're having around eating disorders. There was an incredibly thorough investigation done by Noteworthy in 2022 by Maria Delaney, who spoke to people who are struggling with eating disorders. I would implore anybody who wants to learn more about it to go and to look at it. And she spoke to people who said, you're very much motivated to get worse in order to get the help that you need, which means it takes even
actually
longer.
Like, it's literally a number on a page. It's like, oh, your BMI is actually too high. So you don't get help.
I mean, how are you supposed to deal with that, especially if you are struggling with mental illness? And anorexia has the highest mortality rate of all mental illnesses, which we need to remember as well. So this is serious. It's something that is, we're seeing a spike in it. It's definitely down to, I think, a lack of understanding, like we mentioned earlier, but also it's down to education as well. You would hope that we are reaching kids and young people earlier now so that they have an understanding.
I'm sorry,
this.
Is the spike is down to a lack of understanding, or the lack of resourcing is down to a lack of understanding?
Well, I think more people are presenting with symptoms of it now. I can't speak to what the spike is actually for. I don't have the data in front of me, but I think that since 2022, we've been seeing increases in people
and
presenting.
What's the perceived wisdom as to why that's happening? I mean, is it kind of social media? Is it societal pressure?
Well,
is it maybe a greater awareness?
I mean, it's a mental illness. You know, people have been struggling with eating disorders for generations. You know, there's proof of eating disorders being very early mental illness that have been displayed even before people knew what they were. So it's not new. I think there's a more understanding of body image because of social media now and because of the imagery through advertising that young people are being subjected to. And that's why you see reports coming up of young people presenting with eating disorder much earlier, you know, which is shocking as well. So there's no way, I think, of tracing, you know, why it's happening, why the spikes are happening. But what is happening and what we can't deny is that people are crying out for help and it's not coming to fruition.
John, when was the last time you were breathalyzed driving?
I just revealed the magic of radio. Your researcher did ask me that question. I was breathalyzed once. But I couldn't figure out, whenever they introduced under law the new mandatory testing, it was about a week after. So either that was 2007 or 2009. I should have researched.
So at least 15 years ago, if not 17 years ago.
Once ever. I gave up drink about 15 years ago. I should point out I did pass the breathalyzing test. But,
I was going to say, that wasn't
It was on a road in Donabate late at night. And it's a very disconcerting experience because it was dark. I didn't actually think where they were was particularly safe. And there was a pile up, so I blew in the bag. But that's once ever in 15 years.
Yeah.
Never seen and never been asked since.
Yeah, I get the reason we bring this up, and we're going to talk about it kind of in a few minutes in more detail and hear other accounts of people up and down the country. Niamh, is that Jack Chambers, kind of for whom road safety is within his bailiwick. It is his purview as minister. He's never been breathalyzed.
Yeah,
I couldn't tell you the last time. I drive about 60,000 kilometers a year. And I couldn't tell you. It's as long as go as when John was breathalyzed.
No, I was thinking about it myself. And I was thinking, you know, when I was speaking with your researchers, when the last time I was stopped as well. And similar to what Minister Jack Chambers said in the interview, it was probably during the pandemic time that I was even that I've even seen a checkpoint recently in recent years. But I suppose why this is being brought up now, and there's a poll in the Irish Independent today and so far this afternoon, over 1,800 people have taken part. 54% have said no, they haven't been breathalyzed. 46% have said yes. The reason is obviously because there's been, you know, a spike in people dying on the roads. Four people have died in a 24-hour period so far this week in separate accidents in Cork, Dublin and Donegal. And that's shocking so far this year. And it's only April, 68 people have died on Irish roads. So, of course, you know, people are looking into this and people are trying to figure out, like, what's going on. Minister Chambers said that it's behavioural slip during COVID-19 that maybe, you know, might contribute to it. But the pandemic years, you know, they're long in the back rear view window now. You know, that wasn't happening last week. So, yeah, you know, it's interesting. With
people kind of do things because they can get away with it. Isn't that ultimately what we know about human behaviour?
I wonder, is there something to the lockdown thing, though? I think society has completely changed in drink driving. To the acceptance of it, and when I started driving and drinking in a pub, there was a completely different attitude to drink driving in Ireland then. But there was one I spoke to someone in the Department of Transport recently, and it's been a huge spike. Now, I haven't got the figures; it just occurred to me as you mentioned the pandemic on deaths of pedestrians.
Yeah,
and they don't know why. It's
some of them are looking at their phones.
Yeah,
People don't like to say it because it feels like you're victim blaming, you know. And people in cars are the ones with the kind of responsibility on their shoulders. They're traveling around at speed in this huge thing that weighs a couple of tons. So it's not to victim blame, but it is partly that not just the pedestrian, the driver as well. They're
Everyone
all looking
is
at their
distracted.
Phone.
Yeah, well,
and people are stepping out in front of traffic.
Was it? I thought. I mean, there you go. I wasn't even aware that it was the phones. I was wondering, was it the lack of traffic that had been on the road for a period during lockdown? But no, I mean, for the first time in my experience of 25 years as a journalist, the Garda commissioner admitted at a Dáil committee that he hadn't enough resources and that he hadn't enough people. That's never happened before. Usually they stayed with the party line. There is an acceptance within the guards now, and I think across government, there just aren't enough Gardaí. And the first thing that falls really is going to be monitoring of driver behaviour.
We're going to talk about this in more detail in a few minutes. I'm 65, never been breathalyzed, says one listener. I'm driving 18 years. I've never been breathalyzed, driving 43 years in Dublin. Only once breathalyzed, says Paul. Driving far and wide since 95, never ever breathalyzed. 52, a sales rep for 25 years. 70,000 plus miles done on the road every year. God, puts my 60,000 kilometres in the halfpenny place. Never been breathalyzed. 087-1400-106 is the number if you want to get in touch. makeawish.ie/donate if you want to donate as well. More on that a little bit later. John Lee, Niamh Mar, thank you both very much for joining
me.
The other news that you might have seen, you certainly would have gotten an alert if you were looking at your phone in the last hour or so, is the news that New York's highest appeal court has decided to overturn Harvey Weinstein's 2020 rape conviction, and a new trial has been ordered. Harriet Alexander is the senior features reporter with The Times. Harriet, what can you tell us about this?
Yeah, so this decision was made, as you say, by the appeals court. It was a close decision. It was 4-3. And they essentially found that the decision by the prosecution to bring in other women to testify about previous bad acts of Harvey Weinstein. These were four other women whose cases weren't actually being tried, but they sort of testified in support of the two women whose cases were actually part of it. The appeals court found that was unlawful and that it was unfair against Harvey Weinstein.
So all those other convictions that Harvey Weinstein is currently serving sentences for, they still stand, do they?
Yes, they do. So he was actually convicted in California of rape in December 2022. He was sentenced to 16 years. So that does mean that he won't automatically now be immediately freed from prison. I mean, it's worth noting that he's trying to overturn that California conviction as well. So if he does succeed in that, then yes, he would be a free man. But what happens now is that in New York, the district attorney here in Manhattan, Alvin Bragg, he will have to decide whether to retry this case, which he might well do. I mean, of course, that involves putting the women through it all again. But it's up to him, really, to decide whether to retry it. And perhaps he will wait and see what the California Appeals Court decides first.
Harriet Alexander, senior features reporter with The Times. Harriet, as always, thanks a million for joining us. And as I said, thank you to John Lee, executive editor with The Daily Mail, and Niamh Mara, commercial creative director with The Journal as well.
The Hard Shoulder with Kieran Cuddihy.
With the MG Hybrid and Electric range.
Weekdays from 4 on News Talk.